This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, welcome to PM on the radio, on the ABC Listen app and via podcast. I'm Linda Mottram. Tonight, a major bounce in the big bank's share price. Are investors betting that nothing from the Banking Royal Commission will dent their super profits? So how do those who gave evidence to the Royal Commission feel about the report that was released yesterday?
Certainly indications are that there's some real change going to take place. I was encouraged to see his forthrightness, his willingness to cross political boundaries, if you like.
Balancing that sense of hope, though, some say there were big missed opportunities.
I thought he might have capped executive and director remuneration and done that for staff within banks also. I think there is a danger in not addressing remuneration that the bankers never feel like they're actually really held to account.
Welcome to the program. Two bodies have been found in floodwaters in Townsville as the region's inundation crisis continues. Two men in their 20s had been missing since yesterday, and the bodies were found in the suburb of Aitken Vale this afternoon. News of the deaths comes as frustration builds among other residents who are still waiting to get home as flash flooding delays the clean-up in some areas. Stephanie Smale has our report.
As water levels slowly dip in some areas, the destructive force of the floodwaters is becoming clearer. At Balgal Beach, north of Townsville, Gwen Coombs found a torrent of water outside her front door in the middle of the night.
So I come out and open the door and, yeah, there was just water and furniture and things just going everywhere. It was just... just like a big river.
She called her friend and local police officer Darren Haggerty at 3 a.m. for help.
There was just waves of water just coming through from over here, just through here, and the furniture was just up against the fence. Lucky the fence was there, otherwise the furniture would be gone, you know, and I just couldn't believe what I saw. And we were just so lucky that it stopped when it did.
As she begins to mop up her home, Gwen Coombs is thinking about the belongings she's lost.
A washing machine and a dryer, probably, you know, you can buy that again, can't you? But the thing I worry about is photos that you can't replace. You know, I lost a little girl when she was 3 1/2, and I can't replace that photo. So, you know, it's pretty sad.
Townsville's large military population has suffered damage to homes just like other residents. Daniel Hyman fled his flooded house on the weekend and has been ferrying people to safety with fellow army personnel since.
Sunday was chest deep in water, quite fast flowing, so I carried 2 bags of what I could with me, and I walked out to higher ground where a friend picked me up, and now I'm living in higher ground with the clothes on my back for I don't know when. I'm okay, I'm trying to keep high spirits. The reality of it, I'm trying to just shy away from in keeping the back of my mind and keep focused on work.
Frustration is building among Townsville residents who can't get into their homes, but officials are reluctant to let people return to some areas until the threat of flash flooding and more rain subside. The Prime Minister Scott Morrison toured the city as some residents started inspecting their homes.
How's it inside?
Yeah, no, we had sewage come through. And
managed to keep most of it out, but yes.
We were bailing at 1 o'clock, we were bailing water out. And we can't even live in the house now.
Yeah, it's up to about knee level.
Yeah.
And there's mud everywhere. Upstairs is absolutely fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, with the kitchen being destroyed, we've got 3 young boys.
Dangerous flash flooding has caused extensive damage in other areas north of Townsville too and delayed locals' attempts to start the clean-up. The community of Bluewater had its 3rd major flood in a week overnight. Resident Christy Watson says she's exhausted.
With the first one, you know, we salvaged a lot of stuff so we're okay. The second one, some of the things that we'd bought back, we lost again, so we had to go and find all that again. And then last night, I'm just like, I'm over it, emotionally and physically drained. Like, just, we're a lot luckier than some people, but you've had enough.
As the flooding crisis drags on, nearly 9,000 people have applied for financial assistance. There are still thousands without power, but supplies are finally being trucked into Townsville and further north to Cairns, where supermarkets were running low too.
Stephanie Smale with our report. You're listening to PM. I'm Linda Mottram. Ahead, the Foreign Minister Maurice Payne joins me from the Solomon Islands, the latest in a slew of senior Australians, ministers, senior defence officials racing to the region to shore up Australia's position there. But to the Banking Royal Commission fallout first. Well, Commissioner Kenneth Haynes' report into misconduct in the banking and finance sector was scathing, but if the markets are anything to go by, its 76 recommendations didn't make a dent in the bankers' expectation that their capacity to make money won't be curtailed. Shares in all four big banks soared when markets opened this morning, a trend that continued throughout the day. It was a different story, though, for the mortgage broking industry. Major players there have suffered major losses because they face the possibility of a dramatic restructuring. Barbara Miller reports.
Banks have had their best day on the ASX for some time. Westpac closed the day up 7.3%, ANZ was up 6.5%, and the Commonwealth Bank was up 4.7%. Even the National Australia Bank, which was singled out for particular criticism in the Royal Commission's report, ended the day 3.9% higher. And shares in the wealth manager AMP ended the day almost 10% higher. Rodney Maddock is a professor of economics at Victoria University.
I think it was just a recovery rally. People had no idea how bad the recommendations might be, and so they sort of factor in the worst and then buy back in once it's clear what the consequences are.
But there was no such relief for mortgage brokers, with the big players suffering significant losses. Mortgage Choice crashed a whopping 25%, and the Australian Finance Group had an even worse day, down 29% on close of trade. Rodney Maddock again.
I think that overall costs are going to rise because imposing more regulations and more controls and more checks and balances and all sorts of things just makes it a little bit more difficult for everybody to do business. So I think that probably in the long run, returns will be somewhat lower than they have been in the past. But that may give scope still for shares to rise from where they have been, because they've been hit very hard over the last year.
Commissioner Haynes' recommended changes to the mortgage broking industry have been described by some in the business as radical. He wants to see an end to trail commissions paid over the term of a loan to brokers, wants consumers and not lenders to pay upfront for broking services, and wants to see more regulation of the industry.
Well, I was told I wasn't allowed to throw the glass across the room at people. So my initial reaction was I was completely shocked and taken back by where this had landed.
Peter White is Managing Director of the Finance Brokers Association.
I did expect that there would be commentary around it, but I did expect further engagement, not snap decisions, that are predominantly in my view, being based on ill-informed information.
The federal government says it will look at banning trail commissions by mid-next year, with a further review in 3 years on whether the industry should move to a borrower pay structure. Peter White from the Finance Brokers Association says removing trail commissions will lead to brokers being paid more upfront, which he says will come at a cost to consumers.
If they increase the upfront commission, I'm sure as anything that the banks aren't going to simply go, okay, we'll absorb that and just move on. It's going to be passed back to borrowers within their interest rate, as they do with anything. So it'll increase interest rate to borrowers across this country.
The industry also says research shows consumers won't pay up front for mortgage services. Sam White is chairman of the mortgage broking group Loan Market.
Mortgage broking will now be a service only for the wealthy. So if you can afford a mortgage to pay a mortgage broker, you'll get a great deal. If you can't, then good luck, mate. You'll be looking after yourself.
Commissioner Haynes said he was not convinced the National Australia Bank had learned lessons from past misconduct. He singled out NAB's chair, Ken Henry, and CEO, Andrew Thorburn. Andrew Thorburn told The World Today that was not the case.
I was disappointed to read what the Commissioner said about me and about us. You know, that's obviously his view. I don't share that view. I feel we're making a lot of progress to improve the culture in the bank. I think we've taken a lot of actions in the last year to show that we are very serious about change and putting customers first. But I could not stand for anything more polar opposite than what the Commissioner has said, you know, how I may be leading. So I think it was disappointing. It was upsetting.
Rodney Maddock from Victoria University.
Well, clearly progress is being made, but I think the Commissioner was much more convinced by the other bank CEOs that they were making serious and concerted efforts than he was with NAB. And so I think that I mean, relatively, NAB didn't convince the Commission the way the other banks did about how seriously they were taking the changes.
But with markets already rallying around the banks, it's not yet clear how much impetus there really will be for root and branch reform.
Barbara Miller with that report. Well, some political reactions today. Labor has called on the federal government to call extra days for sitting in Parliament to legislate some of the measures recommended by the Royal Commission. And the opposition leader, Bill Shorten, says banking executives must answer for bad behaviour.
I think a lot of Australians will be saying, how can some of these people on the boards of the bank who've been there, I'm not saying someone who's turned up in the last year or two, but some of those longer serving board members, some of those executives at the top who've been around as all of this is happening, it's not good enough for them to say sorry or I won't take long service leave or I'll hand back 10% of $1 million bonus. That's not good enough.
Opposition leader Bill Shorten. And with Labor calling on the federal government to apologise for a delay in the Royal Commission, the Prime Minister Scott Morrison has acknowledged he does have some regrets.
Well, I'll just refer to what I said last year. I expressed last year my own regret as Treasurer when it came to being very focused on the issues of financial system stability. But I expressed my own regret at some of the human factors that needed greater consideration in terms of calling the Royal Commission. But let me be frank, I called the Royal Commission.
The Prime Minister, Scott Morrison. Well, out of 10,000 submissions to the Royal Commission, 134 people were given the opportunity to share their stories on the witness stand. Among the most shocking was a father who told how his son with Down syndrome had been signed up to multiple insurance programs. Consumer groups have broadly welcomed the Commission's recommendations, but some say more needs to be done to stop irresponsible behaviour. Here's our National Consumer Affairs reporter, Amy Bainbridge.
Grant Stewart's testimony to the Banking Royal Commission took courage as he told of his son with Down syndrome being cold called and sold insurance.
It was quite overwhelming in some ways. It was a long-term preparation and I guess the courtroom can be a little intimidating.
The audio of the call played to Commissioner Kenneth Hayne was a chilling example of a vulnerable consumer being pressured to buy an insurance product.
Choose between 4,000 and 15,000 to leave behind for your loved ones just in case you died. So do you think 10,000 would be enough for you?
I don't mind.
Under the recommendations, cold calling for insurance products will be banned. Speaking to PM today in Melbourne, Grant Stewart reflected on the Royal Commission.
I think it was the emotional dimension to it in dealing with what was quite a difficult issue for us as a family. So there was a little more investment from that angle for me in doing so. And probably a little bit of risk too, not knowing what would happen as a result and wanting to make sure our son was protected from more vulnerability or anyone who would have a crack at him.
And given the report is now out with all of its recommendations, has it been worth it?
I think it has. Certainly indications are that there's some real change going to take place as a result of the recommendations that the Commissioner made, and I was encouraged to see his forthrightness and his willingness to cross political boundaries, if you like, and to say things that were he saw for the good of the whole community.
The recommendation to ban the hawking or cold calling of certain products, including insurance, yeah. How does that make you feel?
That feels like a win because that was one of the things that, together with Consumer Action, we were adamant should happen because I think the risks are too high. And it targets vulnerable people who are at risk who have sometimes no idea what's going on.
Ryan Lowe was also among the few chosen to appear. He told the Royal Commission how he discovered 5 loans to his father's small business, loans that he learned about after his father died suddenly in a workplace accident. Ryan told PM giving his testimony was worth it, but he had hoped the recommendations would go further, particularly in tightening lending standards to small businesses.
I was really hoping that small business lending would be looked at and changed, because I think currently as it stands, you know, money's too easily lent and people can get themselves into situations, as we have, too easily. So I'm really hoping for change there. I'm really happy that, you know, the way mortgage brokers work is going to change, because I feel the way it's going at the moment, it's obviously, you know, the mortgage broker has an absolute necessity to get these loans across the line because they get a kickback out of it.
And in your particular family situation, you think that could have actually made a tangible difference?
I think if the new mortgage broker rules were in back when my dad was lending, we'd be in a different position than we are now.
Ryan Lowe speaking with our National Consumer Affairs reporter Amy Bainbridge. So what would the banking system look like if it did put customers first? Is that what the Banking Royal Commission is going to deliver? Well, some are obviously optimistic, but critics say there is plenty of evidence that the Royal Commissioner has missed some opportunities. Warren Staples is among them. He's a senior lecturer in management at RMIT University. Warren Staples, thanks for speaking with us. Can we start with oversight in the banking context? Because despite the criticisms of ASIC and APRA by the Royal Commission and through the hearings, they are being tasked with being the solution, really, with their own oversight body on top. Is this going to work?
I think to a degree it's part of the solution, but I think that it fails to address some of the other more systemic kind of nature of the problems. With the oversight bodies, we know that they can be leaned upon politically. They can have their funding cut. They can have their work emphasised or de-emphasised for them. So I think it's part of the solution, but I don't view it as the central plank.
So how do you address the central? What should the central plank be if you want to get to those structural problems?
Well, I think some of the structural problems are about the kind of nature of the sector in Australia. You know, it's the big four and the concentration of them and their power, and that there are alternative models where you might break those up into, you know, different types of lending entities, more community-based banks, smaller banks. The kind of research from other international jurisdictions is that they provide cheaper lending prices, better consumer services, and don't over-leverage themselves in the same way that these bigger banks do. There would have been more time needed to really consider how that might happen. So putting the industry structure aside, then the other two key issues for me, and Commissioner Hayne recognises their importance, around governance, culture and remuneration. And I think that the governance of the banks could have been altered. There could have been recommendations around having consumer advocacy groups as representatives of the board, worker representatives proposed for the board. I think these members would have been far less likely to ignore the whistleblowers that were prevalent in a number of the big four banks.
That still leaves you with the rest of the board beholden to shareholders, though, doesn't it? I mean, how do you balance that?
Look, I mean, one thing you could have done is with these big four banks is you could have proposed a dual tier structure where you have public interest people serving on the supervisory board, and then you have a management board. Interestingly, in Ireland after the GFC, where they lost, you know, where kind of $60+ billion of public money was used to prop up the banking sector, they insisted on appointing public interest directors to the banks. And they only appointed one per, I think it was their six banks, right? So even then they have changed the directors' duties to reflect public interest. I mean, I think the thing in Australia is that we assume that the directors are there to kind of make money for shareholders. But the Corporations Law actually is kind of, or the Corporations Act is clear about them acting in the corporation's best interest. And my view is that if you want them to serve the public interest, you need to change the composition of the people on the board.
I guess the other issue is remuneration too. There was a lot of expectation that the Royal Commissioner might say, look, let's cap remuneration. He didn't. What would be the impact if we did do that? Can it work?
I thought he might have capped executive and director remuneration, or at least proposed kind of outlines of what those kind of acceptable bands might be, and done that for staff within banks also. What would have happened is that all of the staff who work for banks would have been personally affected, and they all would have had more of a sense of we're responsible for this and we're being held accountable for this. I think there is a danger in not addressing remuneration that the bankers never feel like they're actually really held to account.
This Royal Commission is by no means a one-off in terms of inquiries into collapsed financial entities or, you know, the general state of the banks. We've had plenty of those.
Yeah.
Is this just going to be another one?
Well, I think that's the real danger, and that's what Andrew Linden, my colleague at RMIT, have been writing about, and we are concerned that in not addressing some of these more systemic structural issues, that we're doomed to repeat this, that the lessons of the past are forgotten. If you look back to, you know, 2003, there was a big HIH insurance collapsed, and, you know, there were recommendations around independent directors and other parts of the governance of the company, and it does seem that these come in cycles.
Warren Staples, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Warren Staples, and he and his colleague wrote in The Conversation about those issues today. The Foreign Minister, Maurice Payne, has issued another call to Thailand to release detained refugee footballer Hakeem Alarabi home to Australia. That's on top of an earlier personal appeal by the Prime Minister to his Thai counterpart. Hakeem Alarabi made a brief court appearance in Bangkok yesterday after a formal request for his extradition to his former home of Bahrain, where he fears he will be tortured. But he's back in a jail cell while his legal team sets about translating key documents to make arguments against the extradition at a hearing in April. Senator Payne issued the call as she headed to the Solomon Islands, becoming the latest on a busy Pacific circuit as part of Australia's so-called step up to reassert itself against new challenges in the region like China. The Prime Minister was in the region recently. His Assistant Minister for the region, Anne Rustin, has just been there too. The Chief of the Australian Defence Force, the Border Force and Australian Federal Police Commissioners and the Deputy Director General of ASIO, they have all been there in the past fortnight. I spoke to Senator Payne on the line to Honiara a little earlier about Australia's revived interest in the region.
I think it shows a great interest from Australia and engagement with the region. The Prime Minister, of course, describes the region as our family. I am in Honiara, and I was here less than a year ago as a Defence Minister and made a number of visits across the region as Defence Minister as well. So it's a long-term interest of mine, and certainly our Pacific step-up is really enabling us to articulate that engagement in a different way, and I think that that's a really good thing.
As you say, you're in the Solomon Islands. They have an election next month. That's the first election since the 15-year-long Ramsi mission led by Australia came to an end in June last year. Will Australia be offering any additional assistance to the Solomon Islands in the election context, particularly in light of the rumbling concerns there are about outside influences like China, for example?
We have had an ongoing relationship with the Solomon Islands Electoral Commission. We will certainly be assisting with that, and I expect to discuss matters of logistics, for example, given the disparate nature of the electorate here, many islands and much ocean, to ensure we can assist where possible.
You're also visiting Tuvalu on this trip. The Prime Minister, Eneli Sapuaga, there, like so many Pacific leaders, has spoken out about what they say is too little effort by Australia to reduce carbon emissions, to phase out coal. What will you tell him in light of that concern? So many nations see it in the Pacific as an existential crisis for themselves.
I've met with the Prime Minister on a number of occasions, and we both signed on to the Boy Declaration at the Pacific Island Forum in Nauru last year, which has as its first significant security challenge the impact of climate in this region.
But you'll have nothing more to offer him in terms of Australia further reducing carbon emissions, something that many Pacific leaders have specifically talked about.
Well, that's certainly been raised, and Australia is on track, as we know, to meet our targets. We participated strongly in the planning meetings in Katowice in Poland for the Paris Agreement, and so we'll, I'm sure, be discussing those issues with Prime Minister Sopawanga and his cabinet this week.
And Australia is not on target, Minister. I mean, that's what the conclusion is, and that is disputed by those Pacific leaders themselves as well.
Well, Australia, as the Prime Minister has indicated, as the Minister of Environment for the Environment has indicated, is on target to meet the commitments that we have made. And the focus of our work in the Pacific is supporting our neighbours, supporting these members of our Pacific family who are dealing with significant adaptation and resilience issues to address those.
Minister, just on another matter, you've reiterated in a statement today Australia's calls for the Thai government to release Hakim Al-Arabi home to Australia. He is still in jail in Thailand, in shackles in his court appearance yesterday. Do you have any developments to report? And why do you think Thailand is not heeding Australia's repeated very high-level calls?
Well, of course, there is a process, a legal process underway in Thailand, but we understand there have been acknowledgements by Thailand's Office of the Attorney General, which have publicly confirmed that the Thai Extradition Act does allow for executive discretion in cases such as this. So I have strongly reiterated our interest and our call for Mr. Al-Arabi to be released from detention and to be returned to Australia, where he is able to live under a protection visa and to be with his family.
The Foreign Minister, Maurice Payne, and apologies for some of the issues on that line to Honiara. Back home, and one of Australia's most powerful Indigenous land councils is in turmoil. The Federal Indigenous Affairs Minister has launched an investigation into what's being called serious allegations about the Northern Land Council's governance. It's prompted concerns that sensitive negotiations the Land Council was having about whether the NT fishing industry can continue to use Indigenous-owned coastal waters could stall. Jane Barden reports.
The Northern Land Council has been one of the nation's most effective lobbyists of the federal government on Indigenous land rights and remote housing. But its new chief executive, Jack Arquette, says it's now in trouble.
Every organisation or business goes through a cycle where you're going to hit the wall once or twice. Well, we're hitting the wall now, and it's the worst time I've ever seen it.
He says he's been brought in by the Land Council's executive to make it more accountable to stakeholders. The NLC is funded through federal government grants and royalties paid to Indigenous landholders across the Top End. But he's been handed a mess of allegations and counter-allegations and a partial investigation into them.
That's why I put my hand up, to come back and help out and turn it around.
The trouble started when regional councillors started asking why a Northern Land Council subsidiary, the Aboriginal Investment Group, was charging such high rent to the Land Council for its buildings. Councillors demanded to know whether there's a conflict of interest, because the Land Council executive is also the leasing company's board of directors. Councillor James Singh wants to know why the Land Council's two previous CEOs, Joe Morrison and Rick Fletcher, who launched the conflict of interest investigation, were sacked by the executive.
The executive have lost their way, and they believe that they're a power amongst themselves, and they feel that they can do whatever they want and have no qualms about doing it and not answering to us.
Members of the NLC executive haven't returned the ABC's calls. Both the leasing company and Jack Arquette say there's no problem.
This organisation is squeaky clean in terms of the way it does business. There's no conflict of interest whatsoever.
Mr. Arquette says he'll continue the internal investigation, and it will also probe the Land Council executive's allegations that the former CEO, Joe Morrison, may have misappropriated funds and raised his assistant's salary. Joe Morrison says he's produced documents to disprove the allegations. Jack Arquette says he'll look at that.
Let me have a look at the files, and then I'll tell you who's an angel and who's not.
He's called on the federal government not to meddle.
We also can tell the minister, well, hang on, this is not your inquiry, this is ours. It's internal, and we'll do this the way we suggest.
Instead, the federal Indigenous Affairs Minister has appointed a departmental official to oversee the investigation into what he's calling serious allegations about the Land Council's governance. Land Councillor James Singh doesn't think that intervention will necessarily work, and he's calling on the Minister to order a full Land Council meeting to thrash the issues out.
We've been lobbying the Minister, and we're still lobbying the Minister, and hopefully we get some response from him.
He says important negotiations on whether Indigenous traditional owners will continue to allow fishing along the majority of the territory coastline have stalled.
The negotiations and consultations that should be taking place are being held up and frozen because of this turmoil at the moment.
Jack Arquette says he's confident that won't happen and an agreement can be reached by the end of the year. But Territory Opposition Leader Gary Higgins is among those not buying that.
We've also got a major issue around the negotiations over housing funding as well for community. And the people that are suffering out of this are the Indigenous people.
Northern Territory Opposition Leader Gary Higgins, Jane Barden reporting. And that's PM for this evening. Listen back with the ABC Listen app, or if you want to get to our website, search ABC PM. You'll find all of our stories there. And from both of those places, you can share them too. And you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We're back tomorrow. Enjoy the radio ahead, and the ABC News team will keep you updated throughout the evening. Good night.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.